This is it, everybody. Our May fundraiser ends on Friday, and it's your last chance to help us reach our goal this month. Revenue sources for newsrooms like ours are changing, and donations from you, our marketplace community of listeners, are more important than ever. So please help us reach our May goal before Memorial Day weekend and fund public service journalism for all. Give now at marketplace.org/donate, and thanks. Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
On the program today, the long holiday season, the cost of a pint of beer, and your breakup splurges. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Portland, Oregon, I'm Rima Jerez, in for Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday, November 23rd. Good to have you with us on this Thanksgiving. We are entering the official holiday shopping season. But it feels a little strange to say that, because if you've been in any stores recently, or even online, you've probably noticed that the holiday ads, the sales, they've been going on for a while now. A report out this month from McKinsey & Company backs up what we've been seeing. This unofficial holiday shopping season did start earlier than last year's, and odds are it's going to last longer. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams explains why.
According to McKinsey, shoppers are spreading out their holiday purchases this year, and one reason for that is because we can.
Consumers, unlike last year and the couple of years before, where they were worried that if they don't get something, they're not going to find it available, given supply chain issues.
Tamara Charm is a partner at McKinsey.
This year, consumers have the sense that they'll be more available for more of the time, and they want to be really choiceful and thoughtful about what they're going to get and when they're going to get it.
And they're looking for deals, says Candace Corlett, president of WSL Strategic Retail, because for many shoppers, money is a bit tight right now.
49% of people tell us they have less money now than they did last year to spend on gifts.
Corlett points out younger consumers who may have otherwise splurged on holiday parties and gifts are back to repaying their student loans. Plus, everyone is dealing with inflation, and so retailers, says Corlett, are asking,
how can I be first out of the box and get the money that people have to spend on gifts?
The answer? Sales and discounts, early and often, in-store and online. But there's another question.
If I'm buying holiday gifts for family in early November because Amazon or Best Buy or Walmart has had some, you know, amazing Black Friday-like deal, has that just substituted purchases that I would have done in December?
Chad Lusk is managing director at Alvarez & Marsal Consumer and Retail Group. He warns that even if early numbers look good, retailers
can't necessarily use that as an indication that we're going to have a stronger season in aggregate. It just might mean that I'm pulling demand ahead.
Lusk predicts we'll get a better read on what the overall shopping season will look like after Black Friday weekend. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Wall Street today closed, of course, because of the holiday. But coming up, a travel edition of The Numbers. As Kimberly just reported, this holiday season feels more like seasons. But do not get me wrong, the sacred retail holiday that is Black Friday still very much matters. Retailers, of course, rely on people flocking to malls and big box stores in a desperate pursuit for the best deals. Meanwhile, other people, especially the younger ones, will show up from the comfort of their home, clicking and dragging their favorite things into online shopping carts. So, question is, Which are you? Team internet or team brick and mortar? Or, as Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval reports, both.
Ahead of Black Friday, the cast of the 2004 movie Mean Girls reunited for a Walmart ad campaign.
After high school, Gretchen formed her own clique, the Wieners household.
Morning. In one spot, grown-up mean girl Gretchen Wieners tells her casually dressed daughter,
"Oh, sweetie, it's Wednesday. You're wearing sweatpants."
"I'm online shopping all day. Walmart's Black Friday deals just dropped."
This throwback campaign represents Walmart's strong omnichannel retail strategy, says Brittany Steiger at Mintel.
Their in-store experience is really consistent. They have a lot of doors throughout the U.S., but they're also putting a lot of effort into online Black Friday deals.
Because the lines between in-store and online are blurring.
Retailers and brands are increasingly looking to omnichannel as a more cohesive whole rather than a separate and distinct in-store and online shopping experience.
It's not in-store versus online. It's in-store and online and something in between. Claire Tassin is an analyst with Morning Consult.
This year, I'm noticing a pretty large uptick, honestly, in the number of people who are using buy online, pick up in store, buy online, pick up curbside.
Tassin says at the same time, retailers are trying to get people back into physical aisles, pushing the whole sparkly holiday experience because in store,
people are going to impulse buy more items, small items that you're like, oh, let me just add this into my cart.
But with cyber shopping, you can have lots of virtual carts open and price is king. Morningstar analyst David Swartz.
With online shopping, price transparency is easier than ever before.
He says while the pandemic accelerated e-commerce, some retailers still have that special sauce for getting customers to show up in person. Ulta, Dick's Sporting Goods, and Five Below.
You see a lot of teenagers that they just like to hang out there and buy candy and their weird stuff they sell in Five Below.
But he says the bottom line is that for retailers, it's not so much where people shop as it is, are you selling what they want to buy? I'm Elizabeth Troval for Marketplace.
Once those Thanksgiving dishes are cleared, how likely is it that you're going to pull out a board game? Monopoly, Scrabble, maybe some Taboo? Well, here are some other names for you. Exploding Kittens, Frosthaven, Kingdom Death Monster. Just a few and a growing list of games that have raised more than $10 million on the crowdfunding platform Kickstarter. That's money raised to fund production of those games to get them on your shelves. Tabletop games have experienced somewhat of a boom in recent years, and a lot of that is thanks to devoted hobbyists, people backing the projects they love most through crowdfunding. Marketplace's Maria Hollenhorst went to a Kickstarter launch party and brought us this story.
Releasing a board game takes people. A lot of people.
My name is Peter Vaughn.
I'm Brad Brooks.
Colorful outfit is...
Peter. Other Peter. Yeah, we call him Blue Peter. Probably doesn't translate to radio, but he's got blue hair.
It does. Blue hair and a multicolored neon suit.
I like colors. And it's the launch day of my Kickstarter, so I thought I would dress up. This is my co-designer, Alex. He's the designed Critter Kitchen.
This is just part of the team behind Critter Kitchen. That's critters in a kitchen. The game involves gathering ingredients for meals by moving around little zoo chef tokens. There are characters with punny animal-themed names, like Martha Shrewart and Bobcat Flay. It's one of those games with a bunch of little pieces.
Place all the ingredients, spice, and rumor tokens in the draw bag. Choose one player to be the...
It's not exactly my thing. It took a full 7 minutes just to calculate scores.
I doubled this to 8, so that would be 16.
But the 24-ish people that came out tonight seem to be having a good time.
It's end of game scoring. That's just how it always is.
It's like ASMR for nerds.
9-12. His words, not mine. We're in the back of a store called Geeky Tees and Games. They sell board games, but also fandom-themed loose-leaf tees.
Some of my favorites are Deadpoolong, House Tigarian, The Brew is Out There.
Eric Eichmeyer is one of Geeky Tees' co-owners and said the store's backed around 200 Kickstarter campaigns, plus a few more on competing crowdfunding platforms.
It's an opportunity to have deluxified copies of games, exclusive promos, things of that nature.
Since Kickstarter became a thing a decade ago, with a mission of, quote, bringing creative projects to life, around 40,000 game projects have been funded through the platform. And as a retailer, Eichmeier said he's more likely to put money behind games from established creators.
I do think that there is space for new creators to successfully crowdfund. That said, it's a lot harder for them to rise above the noise floor because there's large companies who are primarily using Kickstarter as their engine to drive new game sales as compared to somebody with a dream and a computer, right?
Critter Kitchen has raised more than $1 million from 13,000 backers who won't receive the game until December of 2024. The launch campaign was in development for about 8 months before raising a single crowdfunding dollar.
We are hiring out freelance graphic designers, artists, modelers, animators, because crowdfunding demands that it looks really good right out of the gate. So all of a sudden we have to animate a trailer and get that done.
That's Peter Vaughn, one of the Peters we heard from earlier. He's the co-founder of Cardboard Alchemy, the publishing company behind Critter Kitchen. Cardboard Alchemy spent close to $70,000 to run Facebook and Google ads for Critter Kitchen and design merchandise to entice backers to pledge more money.
Because it's a kitchen game, we're making a custom oven mitt with the characters on it.
That is modern crowdfunding. And then there are those people with dreams and a computer.
I've got a game myself. It's called Fear the Kraken, and it's about building a kraken and sinking boats.
That's Alistair Milne. I noticed him standing a bit off to the side of the noisy tables where people were playing Critter Kitchen. He's got a background in fine art and began working on his game, Fear the Kraken, more than 2 decades ago.
Are you still developing it?
No, it's done.
Did you release it?
No, because I have to do the whole Kickstarter thing, and I know nothing about it. I've been reading books about crowdfunding, and which are overwhelming. So it's a slow process.
I asked if, given the landscape, he thought someone like him could still be successful through crowdfunding.
Call me in a year. I don't know.
A year. Same time that final copies of Critter Kitchen will be out for delivery. I'm Maria Hollenhorst for Marketplace.
The 8-hour workday, that 9-to-5 job, not necessarily the norm anymore. Especially over the last few years, remote work has meant more flexible hours. What has not changed, though, is that when many of us go to sleep, millions of people are waking up, brushing their teeth, and heading to their graveyard shift. Working overnight, it can be rough, mentally, sure, but also on your physical health. So how can these workers stay healthy? And whose responsibility is it to help them? The BBC's Frey Lindsay reports.
Ahmed Bully is a pizza delivery driver working nights in Cape Town in South Africa.
I enjoy working night shifts because people tend to tip you a bit more the later the order comes through.
So it's good for his bank balance, but what about his diet?
I tend to eat fast food, but it's not particularly the healthiest food. I eat supper when I come home from shift, and then I tend to sleep straight away, which also isn't the healthiest thing.
And it's not just lower-paid workers like Ahmed who work nights, but also higher-paid professionals such as doctors. Dr. Vaishali Banati works in a hospital in India.
At the 2 a.m. in the morning, we always feel hungry. We eat some snack like chips or some biscuits. I have gained weight in last 3-4 months.
The urge to eat unhealthy snacks will be very familiar to anyone who's ever worked a night shift. So why does the body respond in this way? Audra Starkey is an Australian nutritionist and the founder of the Healthy Shift Worker podcast.
Our digestive system doesn't function in the same way during the night as it does during the daytime.
She says the body needs a period of fasting at night as our digestive systems slow right down because we're meant to be asleep. But workers need fuel, so how should they eat?
Have a main meal like you would normally, but eating no later than around 9 p.m. Maybe just a very light snack around midnight, and then he fasts from around midnight through to 6 a.m.
This idea of time-restricted eating was put to the test with firefighters working shifts in San Diego, California. Pam Taub, a cardiologist who led the research, says they were asked to only eat during a chosen 10-hour period.
There were some significant benefits, including a decrease in a certain type of bad cholesterol particle. And we also saw some improvements in quality of life metrics.
Employers are only just beginning to recognize the effects of night shifts on people's health. Night Club is a UK organization that helps businesses like grocery stores give workers practical advice on diet, access to health checks, and input on rotas and shifts. Veronica Meyer is one of the organization's co-directors.
First of all, it's the right thing to do as an employer, but also because it just makes good business sense in terms of productivity and attrition.
Namisha Raja is the founder of UK company Nim's Fruit Crisps, which makes fruit and vegetable chips. She is concerned about having to pay extra bills for health checks or dietary advice for her employees.
If it starts costing us a lot of money, that would be not viable.
She also thinks it might be a bit too much for employers to make nutritional recommendations to their workers.
I think some of them would say, I'm sorry, but who do you think you are telling me how to live my life? You know, I'm coming in to do a job, get paid and go home, not to be told off.
One solution, she says, would be for the UK government to offer regular night workers medical checkups provided by the country's National Health Service, where the tests would normally be free. And with several high-income economies facing labour shortages, some advocates suggest that even if the employers had to pay for the checkups, it could be a sound investment. I'm the BBC's Frey Lindsay for Marketplace.
Coming up,
a customer's going to walk away if they don't have a great experience.
Yep, I would say that makes a lot of sense. But first, let's do the numbers. Markets were closed for the Thanksgiving holiday. If you left home for the long weekend or are still planning to do that, then you are one of AAA's estimated 55.4 million people taking to the roads and skies between yesterday and Sunday. That would be about 2% higher than last year. Air carriers expect that when all is said and done, they will have carried a record number of passengers over about a two-week period. And the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, expects to have screened more than 30 million flyers from about November 17th through next Tuesday. If you're coming home with some leftovers, the TSA says you can bring certain foods through your checkpoint, like, say, stuffing and pies. But it wants you to carefully place other foods in your check bags, liquidy and spreadable things, jams, jellies, gravy, because, you know, who doesn't want to travel with some gravy? You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
This is it, everybody. Our May fundraiser ends on Friday, and it's your last chance to help us reach our goal this month. Revenue sources for newsrooms like ours are changing, and donations from you, our Marketplace community of listeners, are more important than ever. So please help us reach our May goal before Memorial Day weekend and fund public service journalism for all. Give now at marketplace.org/donate, and thanks.
This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. When you go through a breakup and you suddenly find yourself single, maybe a little sad, maybe a little relieved, who knows, it can be tough, but it can also be a reset, a way to get to know yourself a little better, figure out who you want to be moving forward. And your bank statements might actually paint that picture for you. For the Marketplace podcast I host, This is Uncomfortable, we asked our listeners, what things did you buy after a breakup to help you cope?
I had a breakup that made me really realize that I needed to take a lot more time to understand how I worked in relationships. I purchased a bunch of books on topics like emotional intelligence and communication and relationships, and really took some time to try to understand how they applied to my life. I really viewed it as sort of a year doing a master's in myself, and it really paid massive dividends.
Approximately 4 years ago, I became a triathlete because of a breakup. I would be shocked if I'd spent less than 20 grand on this, quote, hobby. At the time that I became a triathlete, 20 grand would have been 2/3 of my annual income, but not planning on stopping anytime soon.
About 2 months ago, I broke up with my boyfriend, quit my job, and I immediately went to the piercing parlor and got my ears pierced. And then I went home to my roommate, I was trying to show off my cute little piercing. He was like, break up with your boyfriend, quit your job, get an ear pierced. Really going through a moment.
You can listen to episodes of This Is Uncomfortable on the podcast platform of your choice. We started the show with consumer spending, and we're going to continue with that theme. We all notice when prices change, like when your favorite cereal costs a little more, or when you're suddenly shelling a couple hundred more dollars on a plane ticket back home. It's annoying, but you kind of expect it. It seems people in the UK, though, well, they have their limits, particularly when it comes to a good old-fashioned pint of beer. The BBC's Elizabeth Hodson explains.
Going for a pint of beer at the pub is an integral part of British culture.
The local. Home of the pint. A British institution.
Our culture, our identity, the life of the village, the heart of the town, the soul of the country.
That was an advert from Britain's Beer Alliance, which represents pubs and breweries. The average cost of a pint in the UK is $7.30, according to comparison platform Finder.com. And that compares to $4.75 in the US, based on Fromage travel website. When the UK's biggest pub company, the Stonegate Group, announced in September that it was going to put the price up by the equivalent of 25 cents at busy times, it didn't go down very well with regular pub goers like Sarah Johnson and Mitch Evans from Bristol in southwest England.
I don't think I'd pay any more because it's too expensive already.
If you were there maybe 8-9 o'clock on a Friday night and you're paying a premium, I think that wouldn't go down particularly well.
The Stonegate Group says it's been forced to increase prices at 800 of its 4,000 pubs to cover the cost of extra bar staff and bouncers. The company wouldn't agree to an interview, but in a statement it told us it offered
a range of promotions and discounts on food and drink products at different times on different days throughout the week.
Jane Pendlebury, the CEO of HOSPA, the hospitality industry trade body, says all pubs are struggling to offset rising energy and food and drink prices and are also having to offer higher wages to attract staff in a tight labour market. She says the UK media haven't helped by calling the price hike the start of the unhappy hour.
If they had said they're going to reduce the cost of pints in low demand periods, that would have been applauded and welcomed. It's just that it's been set as the price is going to increase during busy periods.
Kath Brands from the pricing platform Flint Fox says that before introducing dynamic pricing, which means charging prices to reflect demand, pubs need to think carefully about the risks.
You know when people are drinking more, when they are willing to pay more. And you also know when your competitors are charging more than you as well. You almost need to figure out where your elasticity lies.
She says businesses need to know their limits.
A customer is going to walk away if they don't have a great experience.
John Pybus is the landlord of the Bluebell pub in the city of York, which isn't owned by the Stonegate Group. He says dynamic pricing wouldn't work for his business.
I know if my regular customers were sat in the pub and I'd been charging £4.20 for a pint,
and then 10, 20 people walked in, and now I'm saying it's £4.50 a pint. Those regular customers are not going to be happy.
One establishment in London's East End has taken a different approach, discounting. At Coupet, drinkers can test out experimental cocktails for $8 every Sunday. That's half the regular price. Barman David Latito says it's a good way of attracting new customers.
A lot of times, people, if they like the venue, they like the vibe and everything, they're going to stay also for like two more drinks. Yeah.
He says they often return on another occasion and pay the full price for cocktails. But Jane Pendlebury from the hospitality industry trade body, HOSPA, thinks a lot of pubs will soon have to follow Stonegate in charging more for drinks.
Perhaps they'll just increase their prices across the board and then give discounts during quieter periods.
That way, even though it'll still be painful for drinkers, it won't be quite so obvious. I'm the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out. Talked a lot on the show today about holiday shopping. Well, saw this pretty sobering article in CNBC about how 25% of Americans are still paying off holiday debt from last year. One reason for that is because of higher interest rates. Since the Fed started raising them last year, the average credit card interest rate has jumped from about 16 to around 21% as of this month. Of course, that means for a lot of people, this holiday season will require making some tough choices. But also, I don't know, this might just be my personal philosophy. Some of the most thoughtful gifts do not have to break the bank. All right, before we go, here is your moment of economic context, a little holiday treat, if you will. Gas prices seem to be dropping. The national average for the price of gas, according to AAA, is now down to $3.26. In August, that number was $3.87. Now, of course, it's different everywhere. If you gas up in Kansas, you'll be paying closer to $2.97. By the time you get to Phoenix, the same gallon will run you about $3.56. And just one state to the west, in California, you'll be paying $4.92. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Babawi is the managing editor. I'm Rima Khreis. We'll catch you tomorrow. This is APM. Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.